Is there a team that's having a stranger off season than the New York Mets? I don't think so. And neither does Ryan Finkelstein. Did I say it right? Not if I said it right. I'm not even going to cut that out. Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets. This is Locked On MLB.
You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. Thank you so much for making Locked On MLB your first listen, as we're available on all your podcast platforms. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. As you can tell right there, my lower third tells you can call me Sully. Today's episode is being dropped late on Tuesday, the 7th day of December 2021. And we are going to be talking about Ryan Finkelstein, whose name gave me insecurity right up until the point we're recording. That's why I didn't cut that out. We are going to be talking about the Mets and all sorts of things, and they're just a crazy, crazy offseason that they're having. In fact, it's good for Met fans that there's a lockout, because I think they were just getting whiplash from all the weird news, you know, good and bad, that's been happening this offseason. Hey, follow us on Twitter at Locked On MLB Pods. Same handle for Instagram. I'm your pal Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, as you tell right there. Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Hey, let's just cut to the chase here. The New York Metropolitans have all the money in the world to spend, and for a while it looked like no one wanted that money. And then they decide to give a lot of that money to people who may actually help them. And they are just missing one thing. What's that thing called? To quote Mickey and Rocky, you need a manager. And coming in here right now, Ryan Finkelstein, Locked On Mets. I'm going to lose my lower third and bring you into the room. How you doing, man?
Doing very good. As you said, it's been a crazy off season for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about the first thing. I mean, first things first. They wanted a general manager because, let's be honest, their front office situation was, let's just be kind and call it unstable the last few years. And I'm going to do a deep dive in my American political history knowledge. But there was a period of time around the year I was born, 1972, when the Democratic Party had a hole in the vice presidential candidate. And they offered it to everybody. And nobody wanted the nomination because they knew whoever went up was going to get clobbered. And they just kept offering it, and people kept rejecting and rejecting and rejecting and rejecting it. And one person took it, and then they had to back out and rejecting and rejecting it. And I kept thinking about that when I was seeing all the names that were floated around to be the New York Mets general manager. And for a while there, I thought they were going to get Billy Beane and Bob Melvin. No. Theo Epstein? No. I mean, everyone was bouncing around, and they finally got a guy who couldn't put a mediocre team around Mike Trout, Billy Epler. Tell me your thoughts about this.
Well, I mean, I think it is a little bit funny that nobody wanted this job, and then Billy Epler lands the job and gets to spend $250 million in his first week. So to me, that is something where it's like, I wonder if any of those guys that turned down the job are second-guessing themselves after watching Billy Epler land Max Scherzer and Starling Marte and Mark Canha and Eduardo Escobar. But when it comes to this hire, I think the Mets stumbled into a pretty good one. I get the apprehension to call Billy Epler this great hire, considering that last run with the Angels. But that run with the Angels kind of set him up perfectly to take this job with the Mets, because it's very similar situations where – you have a guy who is taking over a team that has not the best farm system, has some bad contracts in the books, pool holes for the Angels, Cano with the Mets. And if he learned something from what he did previously, this could work out. And the one thing I will say that I've liked about Billy Upper so far is he has delivered on what he said in his introductory press conference. He said the plan is to sign free agents to basically almost rebuild the farm system the next couple of years without trading from that farm system, sign free agents to short deals, and then sort of reset. The biggest contract they gave out was Starling Marte, a four-year deal. So far, they're going according to plan, and we'll see how it all shakes out when the season begins.
Okay, so for those of us watching the YouTube channel, your picture has frozen, but I can hear you. So it looks like we're doing. It looks like we have Ryan Finkelstein from Iraq is calling in. He's on the phone. I'm not sure why you're frozen there, but do you want? We're just going to keep moving on because I can hear you just fine. And yeah, I have conflicting thoughts of this. To me, I'm looking around saying, this is a guy, and it could be that I'm in Southern California and I have some bias, and I've seen up close the fact that they've been handed a player who was forged on Mount Olympus, and all they needed to do was put mediocrity around him, and they couldn't even do that. And the fact that it's not a small sample size of years of that Trout's been there, and since he's taken over as GM, they really have only contended one, maybe 2 years. And the rest of the time, you have the best player in baseball playing golf every October. I'm looking around and I just say, like, are you honestly telling me that some of these organizations that have been able to turn it around really quickly, like Brown of the, you know, the farm director of the Braves, or some people in the Cardinals organization, some people in the Rays organization, who have this steady stream of talent that constantly coming up to the major league system, you're trying to tell me that there wasn't someone else in there other than someone who failed spectacularly? That was my initial thought. That's still my main feeling about the hire. The other thing about the hire is that sometimes you want to have someone who's been there, done that, made some mistakes, and you'd rather they make mistakes with another team. So maybe he learned some of the ins and outs and the scrutiny of the Angels and will have learned from their mistake. Remember, both Terry Francona and Joe Torre took over the manager positions that ultimately made them Hall of Famers, and there was a lot of skepticism because they had lots of failure before taking over the job. Sometimes you need to have someone who has failed with another organization. I'll believe it when I see it with Billy Epler. That's just, I guess, my main thought. I haven't seen anything that he's did during his reign with the Angels that makes me think he deserves the car keys. But like the Democratic nomination in 1972, no one else wanted the job.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is the last candidate that seemed to be a front runner before Billy Epler kind of burst in late and the Mets ultimately hired him was Adam Cromie, someone who had been out of baseball for 5 years. So when you compare that to the last name I had, and I'm looking at Billy Epler, who was at least a GM recently, had that experience, it was just the best hire they could have made. I wouldn't say that Billy Epler was the best man for the job of all the different candidates, but for what was available to the Mets, because everyone kept turning them down, I think that he ended up being a good hire right now. And I think because of the circumstances of this offseason, that was proven out even more, because that experience certainly helped the Mets when he gets hired. And in his first week, free agency is going crazy, and the Mets could not be waiting on the market to come to them. They had to bull rush the market. They did that. And at least for right now, fans are really happy with Billy Epler because he's part of what helped get Max Scherzer to the Mets, even though I think $130 million was probably a bigger factor than whatever Billy Epler said on the phone.
Well, whether he's the factor or not, he had to do that. I mean, There was this sort of – the Mets were operating without a GM. It was embarrassing that we knew that a lockout was looming and there was nobody minding the store. And so that when someone did get the car keys – it was just imperative that they do something to change the narrative of the Mets from, oh my God, they're such a ramshackle organization. They aren't anyone doing it now. There's a lockout and no one got signed. They had to walk away with both quantity and quality. They had to get a bunch of players. Marte and what was it? Cana and Escobar. Now you're moving. And Scherzer. I mean, obviously, Cana, Escobar, and Marte are three quality players not signed to incredibly long-term deals. You're hoping that you get a burst. I mean, Escobar was a all-star this year. You know, Marte had a wonderful half season with Oakland and played very well with Florida and or Miami. I keep saying Florida. And I watched a ton of A's games. I see what Cana can do. He's, you know, he's a quality player. And so all three of those players are quality major leaguers who you know are going to be contributing at least in 2022. And then in comes Scherzer, who I would have voted for Cy Young Award. No offense. I mean, Burns obviously had a fantastic year. I would have voted for Scherzer. He's obviously a difference-making pitcher, maybe not 3 or 4 years from now. But this is for this year. This is all for turning around the narrative of this year. And so each one of those moves – I think made sense to turn the narrative around. And I think they did a good – I mean, I'll give Epler credit where credit is due. And those moves helped – I mean, his first job was to change the narrative right now about the Mets because Met fans are mad. Fans are grabbing their torches and they're chasing Frankenstein's monster to the mill, okay? And so give them something. Especially as the door is closing, like the Temple and Raiders of the Lost Ark, to, you know, with the lockout coming about. So, look at, you know, this is all just part of what's going on, part of the need, because there's so many things going on sports-wise right now that they wanted to make sure that any positive talk, any talk about the Mets is a positive thing because there's so many things going on. You could be easily distracted. And, hey, Ryan, let me ask you, does this sound familiar? You got one device that lets you catch the game. You got another one that lets you stream your favorite shows. And then you're watching sports highlights on your phone. And you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Have you ever been in that situation before?
Oh, all the time.
Well, and it's a drag, isn't it?
Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, I guess what? I am going to tell you and all my listeners great way and simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle. And a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream. And it brings your live TV on-demand favorites together like never before. So you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again. The best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion, get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device required. Content varies by package. And you know what? It is a surefire bet that the Met fans will be happier going into spring training if we do have spring training. But who wants to bet on whether or not we're going to have spring training? I bet that's something you can bet at Bet Online, which is your number one spot for all your sports action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, NHL, boxing, UFC, right down to your favorite Las Vegas casino game, don't wait to take advantage of the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. We're here with Ryan Finkelstein, Locked On Mets. And I didn't get rid of your lower third during all of those ads. So when people think of that jingle that I just wrote, they're going to think of Locked On Mets. Hey, let's talk about the other thing which is really weird about the Mets right now. And that is they have a GM. They have an ace. In fact, if their two aces are healthy, they have the best 1-2 punch in baseball. That is a gigantic if that Jacob DeGrom can stay healthy all year and Scherzer can stay healthy all year. But if they remain healthy, you can't ask for a better 1-2 punch at the top of a rotation. And with the likes of Cana and Marte and Escobar, they're filling in the holes fairly well. Michael Conforto, but still, it's they could be a you know, they could be a much better team going into next year. One thing that's missing, the manager. Now, Gil Hodges, who managed the Mets to the 1969 World Series title, an event that still reverberates in New York, changed the narrative of the sad Giants and Dodger fans who 12 years prior had their teams ripped away from them. They unified, created a new fan base called the Mets, and in 12 years were rewarded one of the most unlikely moments in the history of American sports. Gil Hodges is now a Hall of Famer, rightfully so. But they cannot break out a Ouija board and raise the spirit of Gil Hodges or of Yogi Berra, who managed the 73 team. So here we go. The Mets don't have a manager, and I think I know what's going to happen. But why don't you, Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets, tell us what you think is going to happen?
The latest that we've been hearing is that Buck Showalter seems like a pretty clear-cut frontrunner to be the Mets' new manager, at least as if you're following the tea leaves, because today there was a report that came out. Actually, if you listen to Locked On Mets today, I actually had the reporter on who broke the story that Max Scherzer wants Buck Showalter to be the manager. And Max Scherzer just got handed that $130 million check from Steve Cohen, has just started building that relationship. Steve Cohen reportedly also prefers Buck Showalter, although he's going to let Billy Epler interview these candidates and make the hire. Even another report was that Billy Epler in 2019 wanted Buck Showalter instead of Joe Madden, but Artie Moreno wanted Joe Madden. So if you follow all these things, if everybody wants Buck Showalter and you want a big name manager for a big name team with a bunch of stars, and Buck wants the job, I feel like that could be where this is heading. Is that where you were leaning as well?
Yeah. If you asked me this 2 days ago, I would have said Brad Ausmus.
Okay.
Because Brad Ausmus is buddies with Epler. Ausmus was brought in to the Angels after Socha retired, and because he was Epler's buddy, and Ausmus was let go because Madden became available, not necessarily because Epler wanted him to go. It was only 1 year with Ausmus with the Angels, and then Madden was available, and Artie Moreno jumped on him. And remember, Madden's came up through the Angels organization and twice was the interim manager of the Angels before becoming one of the consiglieres for Socha and then managing the Rays to the World Series and the Cubs to a title. And so I think there was a little bit of, we can't let Joe Madden manage a different team. And so off he went to the Angels. But I thought there was a close tie with Ausmus and with Epler. And so I thought that's where things were going. And you could make the argument that, you know, Ausmus managed the Tigers through the playoffs. He had experience with the Angels. And I like having managers who, as it kind of like we were saying about the GMs, I like having managers who have done it with another team already, who have made their rookie mistakes with another club, and then you can reap the benefits from that. You know, you saw that. I mean, I don't know how much of the Giants' success in 2021 had to do with the analytics and the front office, and how much of it had to do with Gabe Kapler. Kapler was considered a dunce in Philadelphia, comes to San Francisco, and they win 107 ball games. And I think that says more about their analytics than anything else. Like, hell, we could even give this to Gabe Kapler and win 107 games. But, that being said, I'll give Kapler credit where credit is due. You could point to Ausmus and said he had a pitching staff that included Verlander, Scherzer, Porcello, Price, and Robbie Ray, all of whom would either won a Cy Young before or would go on to win a Cy Young, and they got swept in the playoffs by Baltimore. I think that's more on Dave Dombrowski, who kept forgetting to get a closer. That Tigers, and of course, it was handing the ball to Jabba Chamberlain in a key moment, turned that from, what the Tigers were on the verge of splitting in Baltimore, and then suddenly say, hey, Jabba, why don't you come out here and throw gasoline on the fire? And next thing you know, a team with one of the best pitching staffs you ever saw in your life, maybe put one of them in the pen. suddenly they got swept out of the playoffs. I wouldn't have a problem with Ausmus as a manager. The thing that I always find really interesting, and that there's like this list of, at least in the post that I'm reading from a few days ago, of all the potential managerial candidate, which includes Joe Espada, perennial managerial candidate, and who I think is hanging around the Astros because Dusty's probably only going to be there for another year, and then they'll hand the car keys to him. Eric Chavez is probably going to be a manager someday. John Gibbons is like, Riggleman. He will always get a job somewhere. Walter Weiss, Bob Guerin, and Showalter. It amazes me that the lieutenants of Bruce Bochy, after winning all those World Series, that his lieutenants, Wotus, especially Ron Wotus, Roberto Kelly, and Hensley Mullins, I thought those three would all be managing their teams. Kind of like how, Joe Maddon was a coach under Socha, Socha was a coach under Lasorda, Lasorda was a coach under Walter Alston. You have someone, a trio of coaches who were there for three World Series titles and working for one of the best managers in the game. I'm just like, really? They're not getting calls for an interview? And I'm also surprised, Mike Schilt won the manager of the year in 2019, finished third, and got a first place vote this year, and had the Cardinals in a 17 game winning streak down the stretch, and went from being like a fringe contender. At Labor Day, the Padres were the wild card team along with the Dodgers. And then the Padres finished with a losing record, and the Cardinals won easily. And that manager got canned because he didn't get along with the front office. You would think that would be an easy sell for the Mets. Like, hey, this guy won manager of the year a couple of years ago. Remember that winning streak down the stretch? Ah, that was this guy. Give him the car keys. And I don't hear his name being mentioned either. But no. But I do think it's going to be Showalter, because I think that was probably talked. They probably talked to Scherzer and said, who do you want? See also the Red Sox hiring Terry Francona to make sure that Curt Schilling was happy, because Schilling and Francona had a good relationship in Philadelphia. So,
yeah, I think that's where they're going to go. And you're right. I didn't even think about that. There's no manager sitting in the seat. They're having all these discussions with Max Scherzer about how things are going to be going, what the next season is going to look like. Yeah, that probably would have been broached at some point. And if Scherzer said then, Showalter, that makes sense with the reports we're hearing now. And while the Mets are going to make this, they're going to, put forth a show as if this is a big process, it does sort of feel like that's where all roads are leading right now. And as far as whether it's going to be a good hire or not, I just think that, Buck Showalter has the experience. We're seeing Dusty Baker with the Astros. They're still winning a lot of games, an analytically driven team. So I don't think that Buck Showalter can't adapt.
The White Sox were a division winner too, and they got an old school manager in there. And I think La Russa was always sort of a forward thinking manager anyway. He was considered the advanced analytics in the 80s, and now he's considered old school. It's amazing how things turn, but yeah.
Yeah, I think so for sure. And I think when you're talking about a team that's going to have the big personalities that the Mets are going to have, I do think it's better not to have a rookie manager. After we just saw that basically with Rojas, he had going into this season was a 60 game, ridiculous season that you can't even compare it to an actual 162. So this was basically his first year.
And remember, the reason he was a manager is they hired Beltran, and Beltran was one of the few people punished for the Astros cheating schedule, the only player punished. But here's a telling sign, and this is why I honestly, just a couple of days ago, thought all roads were pointing to Ausmus managing the Mets. He's managed before, da-da-da-da-da. Scherzer pitched for Ausmus in 2014 and left after the 1 year of playing with him. We managed the 2014 team. Scherzer skedaddled after 2014 to sign with Washington. I'm not saying he's the reason why he left the Detroit Tigers. I will say it is it raises a few antenna that the person he's not endorsing is the manager that he did pitch under. You know, if you there's like, oh, yeah, I pitched under him. Yeah, I remember he's a good manager. Bring him in. As well as, no, bring in someone who I've never played for.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't think about that either. Yeah.
That's a red flag.
Yeah.
That's a red flag. So which one of these you won? Well, not the guy I played for. Jeez.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So.
The one thing I will say is that if they do hire Buck Showalter, I think Mets fans, a lot of times you get fans where they just want that name. And I mean, every single time that seat becomes open, the cries for Wally Backman, every single time, is bring in Wally, 86. So I think Mets fans are going to appreciate Buck Showalter if that's ultimately the hire they make.
Yeah. And first of all, like, Showalter has done well wherever he's gone. I mean, yeah. And that he, there was a period, like, if Nelson Cruz made that catch, you would have seen a strange thing that, you know, he leaves the Yankees, they win the World Series the next year. He leaves the Diamondbacks, they win the World Series the next year. He leaves the Rangers, they nearly win the World Series 2 years later. It didn't work out that way for Baltimore. But you know, where he goes, teams get better. You know, the same thing. You know, I could point Dusty Baker's the same way, that where he went, including some teams which were moribund when he showed up, turned around. You know, Showalter, you know, he may have that Larry Brown quality that, you know, he improves things but wears out his welcome. This is the ideal situation for him, that it's a franchise that needs a name like him. It needs that positivity of someone and someone with who has done it in New York. And yeah. We forget how popular he was. And when he was let – or was – he technically wasn't let go. He resigned because they fired his coaches. And when that happened, he was pushed out by Steinbrenner. There was all the talk of George must go and how beloved he was and he's ruining the franchise and da-da-da-da-da. People forget that when people wax rhapsodic about George Steinbrenner is all the years of George must go and all the years he's ruined this franchise. Showalter is a great fit in for New York, and frankly, I think a better fit than Osmus. So yeah. I think it would be a good move for the Mets if that's what happens.
Yeah, I think you want to get to a point where a manager, if nothing else, isn't going to lose games for you, and I don't think that Buck Showalter is going to lose any games for you. He's got too much experience for that.
All right, we are here with Brian Finkelstein of Locked On Mets, and gotta say, this was the Mets have had some gut punch years. This was pretty gut punchy. This is when you consider how long they were in first place, yeah. And the fact that the team that overtook them wound up having a parade. You know, it's not that simple. Of well, if we had won the National League East, we would have won the World Series, but. It's still, I mean, just everything. I mean, you saw Jacob DeGrom was having a potentially historic season. And you saw Lindor was supposed to be the person to turn it around, and Baez was supposed to be this and that and the other thing. And I mean, and then to not even finish above 500 and just have everything collapse the way it did. I'm going to bring up my cousin Dave, who's a rabid Met fan. Mets got to win a World Series. If for no other reason than to get people to shut up about 86. I mean, I grew up a Red Sox fan, so you know I want people to shut up about 86. But he's a Met fan. Like, okay, enough with 86. Can we please get another title in here for people to obsess over? And, I have some cautious optimism. Assuming we have a full season in 2022, I have some cautious optimism about a change of culture in the Mets if Showalter comes in and they start to line things up.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things there. For one, you know, I'm 26 years old, and I feel like I've grown up off of 86 because there's been nothing else to grow up off of. So I like one of my favorite VHSs as a kid was the championship VHS I watched all the time that my dad would put on. It's nice to get a more full picture with the latest 30 for 30 and see all the craziness that was going on behind the scenes. But yeah, I think that if you look at this past season, what made it so bad, like you said, being in first place that long, I went through Mets history. There's never been a collapse that bad. That having first place and then having that sustained level of losing, like 2007, tragic. They still had a winning record in the second half. The Phillies were just awesome. And the Mets, you know, but played about 500 down the stretch and it came back and they lost a bunch of games to the Phillies as well. But that sustained collapse.
And to the Marlins down the stretch. Let's we forget. You're losing to the Phillies, okay. Just losing those games to the Marlins were – that was the – oh, you oh, – God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I think that you're right. This is I think the combination of everything, Steve Cohen being so eager, you know, spending all this money, the optimism the Mets fans had going into this year to then, you know, carry that through the All-Star break and then have everything collapse. There's a lot of pressure on this team to succeed this year. And I think that that's why the Scherzer signing was so important, because you can't there was no other free agent that could have had that level of impact next season.
Right, right. Exactly.
100%.
I'm going to make a comparison and talk about a year that fans won't shut up about. But there is some elements of what's happening with the Mets that does remind me a little bit of what was happening before the 2004 season with the Red Sox. It wasn't exactly the same because the Red Sox lost Game 7 of the ALCS the previous year in extra innings. But there was here's where some of the similarities were. You had new ownership, the dreadful Yawkeys, and the trust and everything was finally gone. Isn't it amazing that the Yawkeys took over the team, had it for generations, and 2 years after all that, they win the World Series? It's almost as if it had something to do with that. And as I like to point out, I pointed out in the Hall of Fame show that the Yawkeys were horrible human beings. And, of course, Tom Yawkey's in the Hall of Fame. That makes a lot of sense. And all these people would wax rhapsodic about Tom Yawkey. So he would have done anything to bring a title to Boston. Yeah, except sign Willie Mays. But that's a different, you know, now we can't bench Rudy York. But the new management came in with the Mets to sort of sweep away the bad taste of the previous ownership. There was, you know, new people in the front office. You know, it was Theo with the Red Sox and Epler here, new manager. And there was a sense of we've got to do this. And they filled in as many holes, made as many we got to win now moves, and bringing in the big fish, the big kahuna, which was Schilling to go along with Pedro. And Pedro was great, but also was having some injury issues. He did have a good 2002 and 2003, but it was clear he was starting to be fragile. And then Mets have DeGrom, and to go along with DeGrom, they have the solid veteran World Series champion in Scherzer. And there was a sense of, we have to have this happen now. Yeah. And I think that Mets had that same mandate. But I think this is a winnable division. And I think they are doing smart things. One of the things the Braves did, sorry to filibuster here, but one of the things the Braves did, especially when they got riddled with injuries and they lost their whole damn outfield and most of their pitching staff, is they made sure there was a major leaguer everywhere. And, you know, Soler wound up having the great World Series, but it was mainly like, do we have a major leaguer there? Yes. Do we have a major leaguer? Yeah, yeah. We got Peterson. We got, you know, Soler. We made moves to make sure, okay, it's not a hole. And the Mets are starting to make moves like that with the Acuña signing, with the, you know, with Escobar, with Marte. So they're filling in holes with legit major leaguers. And I think that that is the sort of thing that will turn things around and at least make them certainly competitive. I think if there's a season, assuming there's a season, I think the Mets are going to be very, very competitive in 2022.
They will be. And I think what all those signings did is you push Dominic Smith to the bench, JD Davis, all these guys that haven't performed for you as bench players. You know, if one of those guys goes down, all right, now instead of pulling somebody up from AAA or signing Cameron Maben in the middle of a season, it's Dominic Smith getting some run out there. And we've seen him have some success in the past. So I think that's big. And what the two big signings did for me with Marte and Scherzer is it covered up or gave you insurance for two of your biggest injury concerns. Brandon Nimmo can't stay on the field. Now you have another center fielder in Marte. Jacob deGrom had this injury-plagued year. Now, if he goes down, it's not going to crater your season the same way because you have Scherzer. So hopefully those signings are able to cover up some of that. And if everything breaks right, everyone's healthy, and then you have a great ball club that can go out and win this division.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when, you know, every once in a while you have a season where things break right. You know, yeah. I mean, I think of like the 07 Red Sox, or I was going to say the 05 White Sox, except they lost Frank Thomas for almost the entire season. But the rest of the team was basically, you know, they made it through. And, you know, that's another team that in 05, when the White Sox won the World Series, you know, you looked around, they didn't necessarily have superstars, but they had answers at every position. And they also had an insanely deep starting rotation that year with Burley and Contreras and Garland and Garcia. Yeah, I'm doing some of this from memory. But yeah, that's the sort of thing the Mets and their fans, they need that, because eventually they're going to build a team through the farm system with homegrown players. But they need to pull Operation Marlins 1997 and just like, we just need a title. This team needs a title. This fan base needs a title to just sort of, for this ownership to earn that trust. And to see the Braves have the parade this year, hopefully we'll light a fire under them. And I think it'd be great for baseball to see a Mets title. I know it'd be great for Met fans to have that bragging right in the city of New York.
Yeah, so. I mean, obviously I have bias, but yeah, I mean, when the Mets are good, I think we all know it is great for baseball for sure.
I have a friend named Jamie Fallon, who she's a wonderful, you know, comedic performer and photographer and film. She's one of these Renaissance women. She's also a huge Met fan, and she made the comparison that Met fans sometimes are like prairie dogs, in that like there are a lot of them out there, but like they pop up like going, "Are we good this year? Are we good this year?" Like there's like you see, like they're always front running Yankee fans and everything, but like Met fans have this excited look like, "Oh, is this gonna be a year where we're good? Is this gonna be a year where we're good?" And you know, she's someone who goes to the Met games no matter what, but when she starts to see the bandwagon get crowded, you know, crowded bandwagons are fun. I never understood people like, "Hey, you're not a real fan." No, if there's a bandwagon, that means things are going well. Exactly. You know, there's no Pirates bandwagon right now. Come on board. Wear your pink hats. Who cares? That means things are good.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, all right. Now, talking about things being good, tell people where they can hear your podcast.
Yeah, well, you can find Locked On Mets on YouTube now and follow us wherever you get podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan, and you can find the show at Locked On Mets.
There you go. And you can, as always, oh, and let me put your, follow Ryan at Finkelstein Ryan. There you go. There's your lower third right there for those of you watching on YouTube. Now, for everyone else, you can follow us you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Sully Baseball. On Instagram, on Sully Baseball Podcast. We are on Locked On MLB Pods on both Instagram and on Twitter. And by the way, thanks so much for making Locked On MLB your first listen. Your second listen should be, you know, Locked On Mets with Ryan Finkelstein. Your third listen should be Locked On Bets with your boy Q. And great analysis from Lee Sterling, including the Lee Sterling Lock of the Day and all sorts of stuff. But whatever your gambling needs are, you got it at Locked On Bets. And then to Locked On Mets. Then head over to Locked On Nets. And now let's go over to Locked On Jets. If you're done with that, we've got Locked On Winnipeg Jets. We've got you. We've got all your ets on there. So, talking about the Mets, Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets. This has been Locked On MLB for the 7th day of December 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.